This week's Four Questions Journalist Spotlight is brought to you by Left's Atlanta Media, Atlanta's best journalist database. Subscribe at leftsatlantamedia.com.
Welcome to another edition of our Four Questions Journalist Spotlight. We are talking today with the Atlanta Business Chronicle's Rebecca Grapevine. Good morning, Rebecca.
Good morning, Mitch.
Thanks for taking a few minutes with us. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
So I always like to talk about, kind of give a little background about what your duties are at the publication. So let's start with that, because and you've got a really interesting background that brought you there. Some interesting things you did before, but let's talk first about what you do at the Chronicle and kind of the topics that you write on there.
Sure. So at the Business Chronicle, I cover healthcare, I cover higher education, and in the past few months, I've also been covering things related to startups and venture capital in Atlanta.
So that's a pretty wide, it's pretty wide beat, right?
It is a broad beat. Yes, keeps you busy.
Because startups can be healthcare or education or anything, and then they could be anything, right?
Yes, there's a lot of startups in Atlanta. There's a lot in the two areas you named, and in the financial technology sector. That's such a big sector in the city in general.
It's funny. I was at a conference recently. They were talking about fintech, and I think the number, I can't remember, I won't quote the number, but a huge percentage of financial transactions come through Atlanta. And if you know the number, you can throw that out there. Otherwise, I'm not going to throw it out there. But it's a really big number.
It is a really big number, and there's something like 17, I believe, companies which are publicly traded, which have big presences here. And I spoke to someone from a startup bank a while back, and he said people tend to disrupt the industry they know. So following on like the big fintech companies, we have a lot of smaller startups.
Yeah, I mean, we worked with a company called Cardlytics for a while, and they're over at Pond City Market, and they were one of the, I don't know if they were earlier ones, but they were in that really interesting space too. And I guess part of it is because of the high amount of fiber optic cable and technology that comes through Atlanta, right?
That part I'm going to have to trust you on.
Okay. All right. Yeah. I heard somebody once attribute that to the Olympics, that, you know, the Olympics, that foundation that the Olympics started in putting in fiber optic in some areas of Atlanta helped with that. Maybe I'm making that up, but that's, I remember hearing that. So, you know, we were talking before I hit the record button, you were saying, yeah, I've been working with the Chronicle for 30 plus years. And it, you know, in the early days before the internet, it was always, you know, got to have your stories in on, you know, Monday or Tuesday, and Wednesday's that print deadline. And then the internet thing happened, and Chronicle said, hey, let's do a website too. And now you were kind of describing it as a digital first strategy. So talk a little bit about that.
Sure. So like most news outlets today, we publish online. We don't tend to hold our stories for print. And then we publish a print product. It goes to bed on Wednesdays, and readers would probably get it on like a Friday, or sometimes, you know, over the weekend or a Monday, depending on the mail. So I think there's some real pros to that system. You know, our readers get the news as soon as, you know, pretty much as soon as we're done writing it up. It just is a different rhythm to the work week than in the old, you know, the old days of putting a weekly paper to bed.
So you don't have that same kind of got to get the story done on Monday or Tuesday for Wednesday. You're working on stories throughout the week, and then at some point the editor says, okay, that we want to put these in the print edition, and those stories go into the print edition, but you're not writing kind of with that in mind necessarily anymore.
Yes, that's correct. I mean, we'll turn ours, like yesterday, for example, I was at a life sciences conference, and, you know, I had my story to my editor within like an hour and a half of the event ending. So we move pretty quickly. And, you know, when you work with us, that can come as a surprise to some people sometimes, because we're like, we'll call people and say, we need, you know, the answer now. We can't, you know, wait.
Yeah. And I obviously I get that from your reporter sometimes, like, hey, I'm writing a story, and I need to talk to somebody in the next hour. And you know, for folks who grew up working with the print edition of the Chronicle, a weekly paper, I think it's important to have this conversation where we're kind of resetting and saying it's not your grandpa's Business Chronicle anymore, right?
Yes, that's exactly right. And that's probably true across almost every journalism outlet today that we move quickly. And it's probably tough for people, public relations folks to be in that middle between the main source and the journalist who has the editor breathing down their neck saying, "Where's the story? Where's the story?"
Yeah, I don't know. To me, that's the way the days go. I mean, I just had a radio reporter who called and said, I need somebody in the next 2 hours to talk about supply chain around the auto industry. And another TV reporter said, I need somebody by two to talk about a new CDC report about kids and smoking. So, if you're a PR person, you got to get used to that idea that stories don't you can't take 3 days to respond to a story and set up an interview. It's like that.
Absolutely. And that's sometimes I talk to groups about like how to work with journalists. And that's one of the number one things that I put across to people is like, and so if a journalist asks for your cell phone number or is texting you, don't take it as an affront. Just understand that that is the product of our, that's how we get the news out quickly.
Yeah, and we part of what we do with clients is we do some training and we say, look, here's how the news cycle works. You get to get some reporters who will call you and say, I'm working on this story for tomorrow or next week, or got a couple of weeks to work on this. But a lot of them are going to say, I'm working on this story today, especially, digital only publications or, the Chronicle, what you're talking about, radio, TV, especially. I mean, it's very rare that I get a call from a TV reporter and they say, hey, I want to do the story next week. It's 99.9% of the TV calls I get are, I'm doing this is my story for today. It's 11 o'clock now. I need to talk to somebody by 1 o'clock. Or it's, they come out of the afternoon editorial meetings and I get a call at 4, 4:30 or 5 and say, hey, I need somebody by 7 p.m. to talk about this topic so I could have somebody on the air for the 10 o'clock or the 11 o'clock news. So yeah, it's incumbent on us to kind of train our clients to do that and to know how to get in touch with them and have them know that, if I text you and you're in a meeting, just respond back and say, yes, I can do that interview in 2 hours, or no, I can't. Just so we don't keep bugging you, right?
For sure. But on the flip side, Mitch, I love it when I get to sit down with sources or have a long phone call with them and I'm not on deadline and I can really pick their brain and, ask them a million questions, things I've always wanted to know. That's such a luxury and it's something I really enjoy about my job.
So you have a really interesting background. I mean, I know before the Chronicle, you worked for Capitol Beat for a year or so, right? Which is more state news, political news focused. But you have a big background. You have a background in history. So talk a little bit about that. We don't have to get horribly far into it, but you spent a lot of time in the history field, as they say.
Yeah, I hope you brought your notebook because I'm going to give you a lecture and
Writing
there'll be
things
a
down.
quiz afterwards.
Writing things down.
Okay. Yeah, so I would say, in the professional realm, I have kind of two great loves, and one is journalism and great writing, and one of them is history, and they're really not that different, but pretty much straight out of undergrad, I had the enormous privilege to be able to go to the University of Michigan to do a PhD in history. So I went, I lived in Ann Arbor and other places and did research in the archives. I wrote a dissertation, did not write that in 1 hour. Let's say that it took a long time. And ultimately, walked away with a PhD. And I've had several other jobs, but I love history. I think I think like a historian. If you're trained, if you have a PhD, that's what they train you to do. I got to teach history to undergraduates, and that was such an enormous privilege as well, just to continuously have students coming into the classroom and to argue with, debate with, to ask you questions. You could ask them questions that really hold your feet to the fire, don't let you get away with anything. And it was just a fun time.
I think having historical context in so many areas is key, and especially if you're writing news stories, understanding the history of the city or an industry or a company or the person you're writing about or the context of their experience, I think can add a lot of depth to it, as opposed to coming into it and having no idea what's come before. I think that adds a little bit of, as they say, history repeats itself, right?
For sure. And also in the history cliche category, history is the, journalism is the first draft of history. So I think what,
that's good. I like that.
Yes. I think what kind of, both jobs require you to take a lot of information and put it together and hopefully do a good job putting a human face on these, on different events, the storytelling aspect, some history can be really dry, but most history academics today really strive to be good storytellers and put people at the center of what they're doing. So I think it's sometimes journalists, there were a couple of people in my graduate program who had been journalists and then went on to, study history at the academic level. I have sort of done it in the reverse order, but there's a good relationship between those two industries, professions.
So looking at how you're writing for the Chronicle, what should companies, PR people be thinking about before they send that email, pick up the phone, say, Rebecca, I've got a great story for you. What do they need to think about that's a little bit different from how they might think about calling, a Journal Constitution or a radio station or another business publication?
For sure. And, please do reach out to me with story pitches. I can't take them all. I like to know what's going on in the city, though. I mean, we are always looking for, obviously it's in the name, the business angle of things. So if, and it may be that you are not in the, traditional business world per se, but there is a business angle to something that is happening in your community or with the business you work for. We look for growth. We look for stories about problems and solutions. We look for stories that kind of tell us where the future of where the economy in our city is headed. We look for innovation, a compelling personal story is always a plus. I try to frame my stories around problems and solutions, though. And, I think there's sometimes a misapprehension that we, want any kind of business story. And for our paper, for our readers, our kind of sweet spot is going to be sort of medium to larger businesses. Now, that's not to say we don't also want to cover small businesses, but, a lot of what we're looking at are big companies that have an impact or big players in the industry.
Right. All right. Yeah. And I know you guys do have some folks who cover kind of the real estate side of it and the technology side of it, of business. And you got kind of the partnership with NO that kind of covers the techie, kind of the venture capital side of it more specifically, right?
That's right. Yes. We also have somebody who covers restaurants and residential real estate.
Right,
and that is my colleague, Chris Furmeister, has been covering, we're all jealous of him, but he's been covering the Michelin Guide developments here in Atlanta.
Somebody's got to do it, right?
Yeah. No one's better than Chris. Let me say that. Yeah. He's a great reporter. Let's see. I have a colleague who also covers sort of like growth, development, city planning, transportation. So things around that in the whole metro area, not just in the city.
Right. Okay. So what are some kind of looking forward? What are some issues or topics that you have been thinking, I really want to cover that, or I want to do a story about this issue or focus on that issue? Because I know you guys do kind of big feature stories and kind of double spread kinds of stories on occasion too.
Absolutely. Well, I'm a healthcare nerd, so I love healthcare stories. I'm really interested in how hospitals and, surgery centers are dealing with the healthcare workforce here in Georgia. And there are so many angles to that. Why is this happening? Atlanta different than other cities? Is it the same as other cities? How are these institutions addressing these problems? I've heard of a lot of different creative solutions around the city. So that's something that I want to, you know, really keep my eye on. There's also questions about wages, benefits, working conditions. Those are all sort of, you know, related to the workforce shortage. I'm also very interested in hospital strategy. You know, I think I grew up in Atlanta, so the whole world and layout of hospitals has changed a lot. And hospitals have a lot of pressure on them in terms of their finances, in terms of public attention. So that's a big area for me. I'm interested in like health insurance. That's how I kind of got my start as a reporter. And I just had a story out about how Georgia has opened the process for bidding on its state Medicaid contracts. And if your eyes are starting to glaze over when I say that, let me just say that's one of, if not the largest checks, that, you know, expenses that the state has every year.
Yeah. You know, the how they make the sausage is not always the people don't always think they, as you said, sometimes the eyes glaze over, but they're important issues that people should pay attention to, even if it's not, you know, what's my favorite reality star doing tonight? You know, that kind of thing.
Yes, I think you'll start to see more news about this Medicaid process as it goes forward. And, you know, so I'm also interested in like economic development and the healthcare angle of that. So as we have these like new projects coming to the state, the Rivian, the Hyundai, you know, some of them are in fairly rural areas, and how, you know, across the board, from infrastructure, from roads to schools to hospitals to clinics, you know, how are our communities here in Georgia gonna deal with these major developments?
Well, that's a great point, because, you know, if you're building a plant in a rural area, you're gonna attract housing. You got to attract housing to put the people, and hopefully that attracts restaurants and grocery stores to feed them, and maybe doctors to take care of them, and maybe it ups the standard of care for other residents in the area. Yes, there's interesting opportunities there, right?
Definitely. These are such exciting developments for our state. And again, I grew up here, wasn't sure that I saw this coming, that we would be a leader in these sort of.
I don't think anybody saw this coming in terms of the electric vehicle. It's just kind of like, you know, I feel like everybody's kind of like, hey, we should do that too. You know, hey, that, you know, Hyundai is there. We should, hey, let's go there too. You know, and I think, and obviously it builds on itself, because you get, when you start getting, you know, companies that look at it and say, okay, my company can be more effective, more profitable because I'm in an area where there's all these other companies. So it's, you know, you got more skilled workers, you've got shorter transportation to get your parts and whatnot. I mean, there's a lot to that. Okay, so now the really hard question, and I gave you a heads up on this. So what's something cool or fun about Rebecca that folks should know about?
Right. So even though I'm a fairly serious person who always, you know, likes to nerd out on books and statistics, I love going out and checking out what's going on in Atlanta. So I used to have a schedule where I knew exactly what was happening in the city on any given night. I treated it like a menu. And, you know, Monday night, Star Bar, stand-up comedy. There used to be jazz nights in the city on Tuesdays and Wednesdays. Love to go to the symphony or to hear music at the Schwartz Center at Emory University. But you're just as likely to find me, you know, at like a punk rock show or something like that in East Atlanta Village or Little Five Points. So I just love living in Atlanta. I think it's so much fun. And I'm so glad to see this nightlife coming back, you know, post-pandemic. It was like a boring few years there for me.
for a lot of people, right? Okay, so the next couple of questions, I call this the lightning round. So short answers, so you don't have to give me a huge amount of detail, but what's the last book you've read or the last podcast you've listened to?
Good question. Let's see. Last book I read, I'm reading right now, Where Peachtree Meets Sweet Auburn. So that is in line with history and journalism.
Okay. Favorite local restaurant?
I love Echo in Midtown. I love the General Muir. Those are two of my tops.
Okay. Favorite guilty pleasure.
Favorite guilty, I'm Chick-fil-A.
Ah, okay. That's a good one. Local getaway. What's a place? Could be in Metro Atlanta or Georgia. What's a good place you like to get away to?
I like to go to Savannah. I have family roots there and it's beautiful.
Do you have a spot in Savannah where you have to go just chill or
Yes, my
restaurant or whatever?
family's from Isle of Hope, which is a small isle off the coast of
Okay. All
Savannah.
right.
Yes.
And favorite non-work hobby?
Oh, that's definitely reading.
Okay. And then they go back to the history buff again, right?
Yes.
I know. I feel like I don't have as much time as I'd like to read. I've got a pile of books that are on my to-do read list, and I need to be more intentional about it. I don't know what it is. I just need to do it.
It's a luxury in this day and age to be able to shut off all your screens, turn your phone off, and just, sit down and read for an hour. And it's you forget what it's like to slow down a little bit.
Maybe that's good advice. It's not, don't think you have to read for 5 hours, but just sit and read for an hour, just to turn it off for an hour. Okay, I'm gonna take that to heart. I'm gonna try that.
Okay, I need a report, a book report, Mitch.
Can I double space it?
You
14 point type.
can.
Are you a tough grader? Were you a tough grader?
You know what? I had a I believe that anybody can learn to write well. And when you teach history, what you're really teaching is writing and thinking. So I would help my students endlessly with their drafts. I would let them write as many drafts as they want, and I would help them because, and as a journalist as well, that's how you learn to write. You have to just have to do it. So I think I had high standards, but I wanted my students to succeed. I had some students who went from not being very good writers to doing really great work for me, and that's the best feeling.
That's great. That's great. Well, we've been talking with Rebecca Grapevine, who is a writer, staff writer with the Atlanta Business Chronicle. Rebecca, thank you so much for taking a few minutes with us today.
Thank you, Mitch. This was fun.
And as always, catch our journalist spotlights on YouTube and click that subscribe button, or you can find it on Apple Podcasts or Google or Spotify or Deezer or they're all over the place. Just Google Four Questions Journalist Spotlight and you can find it in either audio or video formats. And as always, you can need to find our Left's Atlanta Media database of Atlanta journalists. Click over to that and subscribe to that as well. And you also get our Mitch's Media Musings, which is our monthly newsletter about all the things that are happening in Metro Atlanta. Thank you, everybody. We'll see you next week.